Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Samach. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins at the very bottom line of Daf Nun Tes Omid Beis at the Mishnah. We continue with various restrictions concerning commercial transactions. Ein ma'arvin peiros v'feiros, afilu chadoshim v'chadoshim. The Mishnah continues at the top of Daf Samach, v'ein tzorach loymar chadoshim b'yeshonim. The Mishnah tells us that one is not allowed to mix fruits. What are we referring to? So Rashi clarifies and says, if a vendor, a homeowner, or a field owner says, I am going to sell you the fruits of this particular field, this and state a quantity, this amount of fruits from this particular field. So the Mishnah tells us that that seller cannot mix the fruits from another field into those that he is selling from this field. So if you say, I'm going to be selling you 100 pounds of apples from a particular field, all 100 pounds of apples have to come from that field. And the Mishnah points out, even if you may have intended to sell, let us say, 100 pounds of fresh apples from this field, you cannot sell 90 pounds from this field and 10 pounds of fresh apples from another field. The Mishnah goes on the top of Daf Samach to tell us, and it goes without saying, that you cannot mix fresh ones with aged ones. Now here we're going to have to use a different example, not apples, but rather grains. And the Mishnah says, it goes without saying that you cannot mix fresh grains when you promised to sell dry, literally older grains. The longer grains sit around, the more useful they become for making flour. So that if you agreed to sell someone nicely dried grains, called yeshonim, old ones, 100 pounds of dry wheat, do not mix in to that, sell 90 pounds of dry wheat with 10 pounds of fresh wheat. The dry wheat is more desirable. Be'emis omru. Now that expression, be'emis omru, is discussed in the Gemara itself, but for our purposes, it's going to mean that the halacha is B'yayin hitiru larev koshe barach b'pnei shehu mashbichoi. The Rashi on the second, third line from the top, b'pnei she mashbicho, koshe mashbich hasarach. The literally the hard, or maybe the older wine improves the softer wine. Lefikach, therefore, posak imo rach. If you agreed to sell someone wine that is considered rach, say, literally means softer, lighter, ma'arev boy koshe, you can mix in koshe, a stronger type wine. V'davke katoni koshe barach. And the Mishnah's example is very specific, mixing the koshe into the rach, v'lo rach b'koshe, not the other way around. Posak imo koshe, if you agreed to sell him wine that's termed koshe, lo ya'arev bo esorach. Do not mix into that the rach type, rach quality wine. So that, as we see here, the kasha improves the rach, but not the other way around. We go back to our Mishnah text. Ein ma'arvin shmorei yayin b'yayin. This expression, Rashi points out, Ein ma'arvin shmorei yayin b'yayin, the Gemara Meforshah will be explained in the Gemara. Literally translated, it would mean you cannot mix grape lees with the wine. Avol noisein loy es shmorov. But you can give the customer this shmorim. Mi shenis arev mayim b'yenoi. One who has wine and some water got mixed up with the wine. Lo yimkirenu b'chonus ela imkein hodio. He is not to sell it in a chonus. Rashi describes the chonus as a place where wine is sold in small quantities. We could say by the cupful. So you're not to sell to a chonus wine in which water got mixed, unless each customer is informed. Rashi says, "Elim kein hodiu lechol echod ve'echod mehem shemayim rovin bo." So if you have, just to repeat what we just learned, if someone has wine that water got mixed in, he shall not sell it in the chonus, in the individual small quantity fashion, unless you tell each customer that the cup of wine that I'm selling you has water mixed in. V'lo l'tagar, and one is not to sell wine in which water got mixed, to a tagor, to a merchant, to a middleman, afalpin shehodio, even if you informed him, she'eno elo l'ramois bilvad. It's a type of item that can be used easily to trick, to fool the public. In what capacity? Well, if you sell the wine to a tagor, he in turn will sell it to a chonus where it's sold by the cup, and the purchasers will not be informed of the fact that they're not receiving pure wine. Mokom shenagu lahatil mayim b'yayin yatilu, in a place that the custom is to add water to the wine, then you can do so, and there's no issue of creating a misconception, a mistake on the part of the public. Rashi adds, "Dekevon denoa shenoagu ein kantos shekol hayenus becheskas kein." All of the wines sold in that area are assumed to have water mixed in. Hatagur noitel mechamesh gronois v'noisein l'soich megura achas. A tagor, a merchant, he can buy from five different granaries and combine them into one megura, into one storage facility of grain. Mehe gisois, v'noisin l'soch pitum echot. He can buy, the merchant, the wholesaler, can buy from gisos. Gisos is a plural of gas, a press. He can buy a wine from different wine producers and combine them into one storage facility. Ubavat shelo yehe miskavein la'arev. Rashi says, shelo yiskavein la'arev ulahoitzi koil liknois haroiv mimokom mishubach la'arev boy mimokom acher ushchenov svurin shikol haperos me'oisei mokom. Rashi describes a situation that must be avoided, is where someone creates the impression that the majority of what he has is from an area of high quality, and in the meantime he mixes other qualities in, but by creating the public impression that he gets his stuff from a high quality, the neighbors think that all of what he has is from that high quality area. Now, the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. Ein tzorach loimar chadoshois me'arba v'yashonois mishalosh di'ein ma'arvin. It goes without saying that if, let us say, an agreement was made to sell the older grain, the drier grains that cost, let's say, more, their cost is more expensive. In other words, you'll get 3 sa'ah per sela. Sela is a denomination of currency. And you'll get 3 sa'ah. Sa'ah is a measure, a dry measure. You get 3 sa'ah per sela. If that was the agreement, you cannot mix in to the deal where you agreed to sell, let us say, 3 sa'ah, some new grains, fresh grains, that are cheaper. They go for 4 sa'ah per sela. So that's obvious. You can't mix in cheaper grains with more expensive grains to complete the quantity that you agreed to sell. Elo afilu chadoshos misholosh vishonos miarba. But even in a case where the fresh grains happen to be more expensive than the older ones, ein ma'arvin, you're not to mix in the fresh grains with the old grains, because the person who ordered the old grains, he wants to process it into flour, and for his purposes, the older grains, even though they're less expensive, they're more desirable. Now, here we have a phrase that's not a direct continuation of what we just said, but rather, if it's true that older grains, drier grains, are more desirable for flour making, how can you imagine a situation where the fresh grains would be more expensive? So the answer to that is, mipnei she'odom roitze liyashnon. You could have a situation where a person wants to buy grains not for immediate use. He has a sufficient supply of flour. So why is he buying grains? He wants the grains to sit around for a while, to age, for him to have in his possession for a long time, till they become yishonois. And in a situation like that, where, let us say, most of the community has already all of their flour needs, so then you could imagine that the fresh grains would be more expensive because there would be a greater demand on them. As we just indicated, people would want to have them for storage purposes, and if they are fresh today, they'll last longer in storage, whereas grains that are already aged, their length of storage time is more limited. There's a Rashi that you'll find in about the halfway down. We have a little star in the Rashi. Mipnei she'odom roitze liyashnon, mipnei she'ilui d'meim shechadoshos, the more expensive situation of fresh grains. Einon mipnei she'ein tovus kishanos. It's not a reflection on their being as good as the older grains. Elo she'odom roitze liyashnon. Rather, the higher cost is because there is a greater demand for new grains for aging purposes. They want to have it sit around for a long time. If someone had made an agreement to buy aged grain, dry grain, he doesn't want them for storage purposes. Therefore, it's forbidden to mix in with the order for the old grains some fresh grains, even if they happen to be more expensive. We turn back to the Gemara text. Be'emes omru be'yayin hetiru la'arev koshe berach b'nei shehu mashbichoi. We mentioned in the Mishnah that it is permitted for one who, let us say, agreed to supply wine that's of the rach quality to mix into it wine that's of a koshe nature. Omar Rebbe Lozer, Arda Omra. That's an Aramaic expression that in Hebrew you would say Zois Omeres. This informs us, Kol Be'emes Omru, where you see that expression, Be'emes Omru, Halacha Hi. It represents a ruling, the way to follow in practice. Omar Rav Nachman. Now Rav Nachman comes and qualifies what we said about mixing the kosher into the rach, ubein hagisois shanu, provided that's during the wine pressing season. The Rashi gives a little more depth of understanding that, Rashi in the lower part of the narrow lines, ubein hagisois shanu, demash bichoi. There the kosher quality wine will improve the rach quality. Shetaisis in ze imze, they ferment together, v'na'asim ta'am echon, and they merge into one taste. Avali achar hagisois, after the pressing season, shekvar kolat kol echod reichoi v'tamoi, at that point, the wines absorbed their aroma and their taste. Ein mashbicha ela pogmo, then the mixing of the different qualities of wine at that later point in time will only ruin it. We turn back to the Gemara. V'ho'idna dekom arvi shelo bein hagisos. The Gemara reports a practice that in which it says nowadays that people mix wines even outside or beyond the pressing season. Omar Rav Papa diyadi v'kom achli. People are aware of it. Everyone knows that is a phenomenon, and they are forgiving about it. They machli from word mechila. They forego any claims in such practices. Rav Acha braid Ravik Omar ha money Rebbe Acha hi. This idea that you can mix, that it's acceptable to have mixed qualities of wine, is in accordance with Rabbi Acha. Desanya, Rabbi Acha matir bedovar ha nitam. Rabbi Acha is lenient when it comes to things that you can taste. Rashi says bedovar nitam shadam toyim, person tastes kedem shalokal before he buys it. V'yochol lahavchin shenis arev bo, and he can determine even before he buys that a mixture has taken place. V'ein ma'arvin shmorei yayin b'yayin. Avol noisein loy es shmorov. This phrase, as we saw in the Mishnah, is initially hard to understand. The translation would be that one is not to mix the shmorei yayin, those are the grape lees, together with the wine, but you can give the grape lees when you sell the wine. V'ho amris reisha ein marvin klal. How can you say avol noisei lo es shmorov, that you do give the grape lees, when the phrase just before says you're not entitled to mix the grape lees in with your sale of the wine? Vechitema mai avol noisein lo es shmorov. If you try to say that the phrase that says you can give the grape lees with the sale of the wine, de ka moda le, that's in a case that you inform the customer that I'm not selling you pure wine, but the wine that I'm selling you has the grape lees mixed in. Well, if you try to give that explanation at this point in the Mishnah, that the halacha will depend, the permission will depend on informing, halmi de katani seifa, from the fact that in the continuation of the Mishnah regarding the topic of mixing water with the wine, it says, lo yimkerenu b'chonus elo yimkein modio. Wine mixed with water, one is not to sell in the chonus, in small quantities, unless you inform each customer. Velo latagor afal pishe modio. And when it comes to selling large quantities of wine that has water mixed in, and selling them to a merchant, to a wholesaler, there you're not allowed to sell it, even if you inform him. So the issue of informing as making a difference is something that you see in the Seifa. Michlal Dereisha, one would infer that the earlier part of the Mishnah, where it spoke about Avon Noisin Lo Eshmorov, Afagav Delo Moda Le, the permission of mixing the lees in with the wine exists even if you don't inform the customer. But if that is the explanation, we run into the original problem of the phrase just before that had said, Ein ma'arvin shmore yayin b'yayin, that you're not allowed to mix the grape lees in with the wine. Omar Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda comes to make order of what we have here. Hochi ko'omar. Ein ma'arvin shmorim shel emesh b'shel yoim. V'shel yoim b'shel emesh. You're not to... And here, well, first we're going to give a literal explanation, and then we'll try to add a point made by Rashi. Literally, it says you're not allowed to mix in the lees of Emesh, of yesterday's wine, with today's wine. In other words, older grape lees with fresher wine, and vice versa also. V'lo shel yom b'shel emesh, nor the shmorim of today's wine with yesterday's wine. Rashi adds to this that the mention of yesterday and today is not literal, but even two wines of today. It's just that they're from two separate barrels. Mixing the grape lees of one barrel with the wine coming from another barrel is not good for the wine. That's what's prohibited. Avol noisein loy es shmorov. However, the wine itself that you are from a specific barrel that you are pouring out into the customer's vessels, that you are presenting to the customer, you can mix in the grape lees of that wine itself with the wine. In other words, when you are selling wine to the customer, if you're pouring the wine out very slowly so that initially the grape lees don't mix in with the wine. They're heavier, they settle to the bottom of your barrel. Nevertheless, at a certain point in the transaction, you're allowed to mix in the grape lees with the wine that you are selling. The Gemara continues, Tanya Nami Hochi, and we have a Tanaic source that supports this. This comes up very often in the Shas. Up till this point, you had the Amora, Rav Yehuda, giving his explanation of the Mishnah to resolve what otherwise seemed to be a contradictory section. And now we have a Tanaic source supporting Rav Yehuda's understanding of the Mishnah. And I emphasize here the names, not to confuse things, because now we have a Tanaic source that opens up with Rebbe Yehuda. This is a Tana, not to be confused with Rav Yehuda, the Amora that just explained the Mishnah. So we have a Brisa that says, Rebbe Yehuda Omer, HaShoyfe Yayin L'Chavero, one who pours out slowly wine to his friend. HaReze Lo Yarev Shel Emesh B'Shel Yoim V'Lo Shel Yom B'Shel Emesh. One shall not mix the grape lees of yesterday's wine with with today's wine, nor grape lees from today's wine with yesterday's wine. Avo ma'arev shel emesh b'shel emesh, b'shel yom b'shel yom. But as we explained before, if it's a barrel of that you opened up yesterday, the lees from within that very barrel can be mixed in and part of the sale of the wine. So that as far as the laws of, we'll say, wine sales are concerned, it's permissible to have wine with the grape lees mixed in, provided that the lees are coming from that same barrel from which you had poured the wine. When we speak about pouring the wine, we mentioned in passing before, you're pouring from your barrel into the customer's vessel. The Gemara continues, Mi shinisarev mayim b'yeno, hareza lo yumkarena b'chonus elin kain modio. One who found his wine mixed with water, water got mixed into his wine, he shall not sell it in the chonus, in, by the cupful, unless he informs the, each customer that what I'm selling you is not pure wine, but it has water that mix, that's mixed in. Rova aisi le chamro mechanusa. They brought to Rova some chamro's wine, undiluted wine from the chonus, from a store that sells wine. Mazge, Rova added water to it. Tami, he tasted it. Lo havet bosim, it wasn't pleasant tasting for to Rova. Shadre lechanus, he sent it back in the diluted wine to the chonus. Omale Abaye v'ho anan tanan v'lo l'tagor afapi shehodio. You cannot sell or you cannot supply or sell diluted wine to a wholesaler, even if you inform him that the wine is diluted. The case involving Rava, when it says Shadri Lechanusa, that was a Tagor. That we have to point out for the sake of accuracy. So the question Abaye is raising is, how can you, Rava, send now diluted wine to a Tagor when the Mishnah says you shall not sell diluted wine to a Tagor, even if you inform him as such. Amale, so Rava explains, Mazgo didi meida yedia. My level of dilution is well known. I happen to pour a lot of water into wine. V'chitema, and if you'll say, still there is a problem. In other words, what Rava was trying to answer by saying, meida yedia, there's no problem of some kind of trickery that will result, because the wine dilution that I do is so perceptible that people won't be tricked into thinking that they're receiving pure wine when it has been diluted. V'chitema, you might say that still it should be forbidden. D'tofi umehaile umazvinle, that the Tagor who receives this, we'll say, highly diluted wine might add a little bit of pure wine so as to bring it to a level where the water content won't be tasted, won't be perceived, and nevertheless the Tagor will continue to sell it as if it's pure wine. If you're going to worry about that, in Kain Ein L'Dover Sof, then there's no end to how much one can fall into the mindset of suspicion. And the result would be, you wouldn't be allowed to sell even water, because you'll sell water to a merchant, and he'll add enough wine to create a, we'll say, a wine taste, fooling the public into thinking that it's pure wine when it's quite diluted. And as you can well understand, that we don't live like that with such suspicion. So the Rashi, he sums this up in the wide lines under the Gemara text, in the, about halfway down. Rashi says, "Ein l'dover sof, sha'af ha'mayim levadom osu limkor l'chenfoni." It would then be prohibited to sell even pure water to a merchant. Shemo yarveim b'yayin, he might mix the water that you sold him with wine. V'lo choshu, and v'lo choshu l'bizman shani mochelo dover ha'osu l'ramos bo kemoshu afso. And this is where Rashi sums things up and says that as far as suspicions that we raise to prohibit sales are where the sale is of an item that as it is could be used to fool people. So a sale of water as it is not something that can be used to fool people. However, sale of diluted wine is something that as it is could fool people. In the case involving Rava, the wine that he sent back to the Chanas, to the Chenvoni, was such that as it is would not fool the public. We turn back to the Gemara. Mokoim shenagu lahatil mayim b'yayin yatilu. Tana. Lemechsa l'shlish u l'revia. The amount of wine, of water mixed into the wine, could be a half, a third, a quarter, all in accordance with the custom of the place. Omar Rav, Uvein Hakisois Shano. The permission to mix the water in with the wine would be provided it is during the wine pressing season. The Mishnah. More information concerning commercial practices and issues of competitiveness. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Lo yichalek achenvoni kloyos ve'egoizim letinoikos. One shall not distribute roasted grains. Those are kloyos, egozim, nuts, maybe in more contemporary terms, outside of the realm of, let's say, health, food, conscious people, we could say candies. One should not distribute candies to the children. As a store owner, you shouldn't distribute candies to the children because neshu margilon lavo etzel, that will entice them to come to him. So that if a parent, let us say, sends his child out to buy some grocery item, and there are several grocers, and the child knows that in one particular shop, if he goes in and buys stuff, he will get candies. So Rabbi Yehuda says that's an unfair trade practice, and it is to be avoided. V'chachomim matirin, the chachomim permit a store owner to distribute candies to the children that come in. Lo v'lo yivchis es hashar. One is not to lower the price. Now, Rashi says, to limkor bazol, to sell cheaper than the others. That will entice people to come to him. That will reduce the income for others. So we call that an unfair trade practice. Well, that's the first opinion. The Chachamim react to that and say, Zochur L'Tov, quite to the contrary, lower your prices and you'll be remembered for good, for the good that you've done, that you've benefited the public. Lo Yavur Es Hagrisen, Divrei Abashol. Yavur, maybe another word that you're familiar with is Livror or Breira, is to choose to cleanse, to separate the waste, the psoilus, from the greasin. If you're selling greasin, legumes, grain products, in this case Rashi says greasin pulin grusos berechayim achas l'shtayim, these are legumes that are split into halves. So if you're selling a quantity of greasin, do not remove, don't purify it by removing the debris, the normal debris that you would find in the legumes. That's Abashol's opinion. The Chachamim matirin, the Chachamim allow that. Now you're probably wondering what could be the problem with doing that. So you will see. We'll see later that could result in inequitable or unfair price increase. Umoidim, they will concede shelo yavur me'al pi megura she'eno elo tegayne v'sayin. The Chachamim who said that you can remove debris from the from the legumes that you're selling, not so if all you are doing is removing the top layer, leaving debris within the deeper parts of your the bin in which these greasen are stored. You see, if you remove just the top layer, you create an impression for the public that what you have is pure stuff, and they'll end up buying from you thinking that they're getting pure stuff when in fact there is debris that's mixed in. They just don't see it. Ein mefarchasin loy es ha'adam v'lo es ha'behema v'lo es ha'kelim. The word mefarchasin will be better understood when we get to the Gemara that deals with it, but you'll see that it has to do with beautification, cosmetic improvements that have the tendency to mislead people. We'll see more concrete examples of this as to the quality, the true quality of what you're selling. Amongst the examples you have here is lo es ha'odom, when you're selling a man. What do you mean selling a man? That has to do with the sale of a slave. That's a man that is subject to sale. Mai tamayu derabonan. The rabbonan in the Mishnah, the beginning part of the Mishnah, whereas Reb Yehuda said that a particular store owner should not distribute candies to the children because of, we'll say, unfair trade practices, the Chachamim, though, allow it. So what is the basis? Why are they matir echenvoni to distribute the nuts and the grains? The vendor can say, what are you complaining about? You think that I'm baiting the kids to come to me? I know I'm a fligno, I'm guzi, I distribute nuts. Yeah, Polonchiski, you can distribute prunes. Believe it or not, in the time of the Mishnah, apparently the prunes would entice children to come to that particular store to get them. So whatever the case is, I think everyone has a pretty good idea of what the position of the Chachamim is. There's no imbalance or unfair trade practice in one store owner happening to distribute goodies. That doesn't prevent the competition to distribute goodies just as well. V'lo yivchoises ashar v'chomim omrim zochur latov. Mai taima d'rabonan. The Rashi explains, mai taima nokat zochur latov loshen brocha. The Chachomim, they don't just say that, you know, muter, whereas the Tanakhama said, you're not allowed to lower prices. The Chachomim could have said muter, but rather they chose an expression, zochur letov, which is a language indicating blessing. So the Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis, mishum deka marvich letara. Rashi explains, mishum de marvich tara, the oitzre peros yiru, people that, let's say, hoard goods. If they see you selling items that they have hoarded, that they've stored up for waiting for a sale later on at a higher price, well, when they see the sale of those items that you have sold for cheap, the imkru bazol, that will encourage them, motivate them to also release from their supply the produce and sell cheap. V'lo yovur es hagrisin divrei abashol v'chomem matirin v'chulei. We saw the Tanakhama, which is abashol, saying you're not to separate, cleanse the greasin, leave the debris mixed in, and the Chachamim say you're allowed to. Man Chachamim, Rebbe Acha, the Chachomim who allow you to remove the debris, that's in accordance with Rebbe Acha. The San Rebbe Acha Mati B'Dovar Nira. Rebbe Acha is lenient with regard to things that you can see. It's interesting to note that we saw a leniency back on Omid Aleph toward the lower part of the narrow lines of Gemara, where Rebbe Acha was matir in the context there of the mixing of water, or the mixing of different qualities of wine. There he was matir when it comes to a dover hanitam, something that is tasted beforehand. The Rashi on this point, when it comes to the separation of debris from the produce, the Rashi on the top line says, Matir b'dover hanire, halo yochol alokeach liroi sulhovin, ma deme hapsoilas anivor me'elu shieshno bachirim. We mentioned before that the problem, as far as the Tanakama was concerned, is that if you would allow the vendor to remove the debris, let us say, just for argument's sake, that the debris constitutes 10% of the total amount that you're selling. So that if for every 10 pounds of legumes that you're selling, there's 1 pound of debris. So the debris count accounts for 10%. What we're afraid of is that if you remove the debris and your goods appear as pure, the price rise that will result, you will raise the price more than 10%, much more than 10%. And that is a problem of Oinoa, where you're mischarging the public. On the other hand, you have the opinion, the Chachomim. We mentioned this prohibition of Lo Yovur is Rabba Shaul. The Chachomim are Matir, and the Gemara explains this is in accordance with Rebbe Acha. Why? Because the public can see. They see that the stuff is pure, and they know that there's a 10% increase of pure grains of legumes that otherwise would have been debris. When you're buying 10 pounds now of this guy's stuff who's already removed the debris, so you're getting 10 pounds of pure legumes. And the fact that there's an imbalanced price rise in it, that is not a problem per se. As Rashi goes on to say, V'toivloi lahalois b'dmeyem shel elu yeser al kain b'nei ha-torah, because what results is that it saves the customer from eventually exerting efforts of his own to purify the product that he'll have to eventually purify before he cooks it up or serves it or processes it into final edible food. So since everything is visible and people can see what has happened, and they understand that this particular guy is selling his greasin without any debris in it, and they know that ordinarily the debris accounts for 10% of the stuff, and they're buying stuff where the price increases more than 10% of the standard rate of non-pure legumes. That's okay. That's not considered ripping off the public. We continue in the Gemara. Ein mefarchasin loy es ha'odom v'chulei v'lo es ha'kelem. Tonu Rabbonan. We mentioned before in the Mishnah that the term mefarchasin had to do with different kinds of improvements, so say cosmetic, superficial improvements that could mislead the public into thinking that what they're buying is really something else or something much better than what it really is. Tanu Rabbana. Now the Gemara elaborates on that. Ein Misharbatin es Habehema. This process of Misharbatin is a process whereby you cause the animal's hairs to stand on end, so that the animal looks like it's bulkier than it really is, that it's fatter than it really is. V'ein noifchin bekervayim. Noifchim would be to cause the expansion of organs. If, let us say, someone is buying organ meat, and you as the vendor would blow into the organs, causing their expansion. So the public will think that these are larger than they really are. And therefore it's prohibited to do that. V'ein shorin es habosar v'mayim. Rashi explains, V'ein shorin bosar v'mayim shemalbin v'hakochush nireh shomein. It causes a change, that means soaking meat in water will cause meat to take on a different hue, whereby meat that is otherwise chochush, it's very lean, will appear to be shomei, to be richer, fattier. Let's just assume that all kinds of health issues aside, the public prefers richer or fattier meat than lean meat. So the soaking of the meat in the water where it will cause that which is otherwise kochush, lean, to appear shomein. My aim is sharbatin. We offered an explanation to that already, but here the Gemara asks, what does aim is sharbatin that opened up this source mean? So we have two approaches. Hacha targemu maya dechizra. Here, in Bovel, it was explained as maya dechizra. What is that? So Rashi, on the fourth line from the top, says Maya de Chizra Mashkin Oisa Me Subin Veheim Novchin Mea Usara Nizkaf. Feeding an animal, giving an animal to drink Me Subin. That's water in which grains were soaked. Subin literally is bran, so it's bran water. If an animal drinks that, it causes internal expansion of the animal, and the result of that is that the animal's hairs will also stand on end. Well, Rashi says nizkap literally means stand up. The next approach to Ein Misharbatin, Ziri Omar of Kahana, Mezakfisa. And regarding that, Rashi has a French word, and the basic explanation has to do with combing the animal with a type of comb that will cause the hairs to stand on end. Shmuel, and here we have a number of names that we've underlined, and on the side we have a triangle marking featured under the mivne, under the structural note, highlighting the word shora. Shora means permitted. Rabbonim shehitiru pu'ulois shaynes. We'll see a list of rabbis that allow different processes, different actions, she mashbichin es hadover ha'emed l'chur, that improve the item that's there for sale. So we continue on the Gemara. Shmuel shora lemirma tumi l'sarbala. Shmuel allowed the addition, the attachment of tumi to a sarbala. Tumi are fringes that are added to a garment called a sarbala. And that makes the garment look finer, better. Rav Yehuda shora le kiskusi karmi. Rashi, using French again, le kiskusi is a French word, b'mei subin. Karmi are begodim hametsuyorin. These are clothing that have different shapes on them, different decorations, drawings on them. Rashi says, uses again a French word that has to do with cloth that's decorated with different colorful forms on it. So what Rav Yehuda is allowing is likiskusi, is to soak these kind of clothing in mei subin. We mentioned before it's bran water, and that has an effect to improve the look of the clothing. Rabo shora lemeidak tzrodi. Rashi says lemeidak tzrodi lahadek bigde kanvus b'makovos eitz. That's to use wooden mallets to bang upon garments made of kanvus. What's the result? Shire chutondak. It creates an impression that these garments were fashioned from very thin threads. Apparently, that's considered a desirable kind of clothing, and this would be allowed, according as far as Rabba is concerned. Rava shora litzlume giri. Rava permitted decorating garments with images that look like arrows. Rav Papa Bar Shmuel shora litzlume dikuli. Rav Papa allowed the decorating of dikuli, of baskets. We just saw litzlumi the line before, but that was together with the term litzlumi giri, is litzayer chitzim. We must correct ourselves with it, just adjust our explanation just a bit. Rava was matir shor litzlumi giri, allowed the decorating of arrows. And Rav Papa allowed the litzlumi, is adding decorations to baskets. But have we not learned in our Mishnah ein mefarchesin lo es ha'adam v'lo es ha'behema v'lo es ha'kelim, that mefarchesim is not allowed improving the looks of man, animals, nor vessels? So how can all of these rabbis allow what they allowed? Lo kashya, there's no contradiction. Ha b'chadati, ha b'atiki. If what you are decorating or improving in looks is something that is new, then it's okay. Your additional efforts aren't going to lead to the misleading of the public to think that what they're buying is new when in fact it's not. So if your basic item is new, you can do what we mentioned above. However, habatiki, items that where the basic item is old, and you would add fringes to an old garment, or you would bang out the threads of an old garment, making them look thin, whatever the above example was, and apply it to an old item, it would cause it to look in the eyes of the public as something new, and that would mislead them. Pirchus da Adam Maihi. What is an example of improving a man when it comes to the selling of a slave? So Pirchus was forbidden in the case of Adam. What could that possibly be? Maihi. Ki ha dahu avda. An incident involving a particular slave. Avda Sava, an old slave. He was old. It was white-haired. The Ozal Tzave L'Reishe U'Ledigna. The slave went and dyed his hair, his head hairs, and his beard black. Also L'Kame D'Rava, this slave who wanted to make money, so he offered to sell himself. He came to Rava, Omar Le Zivnon, and the slave said to Rava, buy me. Omarle, Rava said, you aniyim b'nei beisecha. I would prefer to hire poor Jewish people to serve in my house, not necessarily to buy them as slaves, but to hire them for service, rather than buying you, an idolatrous Gentile. So Rava avoided buying this guy. Remember, this guy with the dyed beard and hair. Also, the coming to Rav Popa Bar Shmuel, Zavnei, he came, the same slave fellow came to Rav Popa Bar Shmuel, and Rav Popa Bar Shmuel bought him. Yuma, Chad, Omalei, Ashkenmaya. So one day, Rav Popa said, would you please serve me some water? Ozal, Chivrei, Lereshe, Ledikne, the slave, before bringing him the cup of water, went and rinsed out his hair, returning it to its original, actually, white color. Omalei, and then the slave says to Rav Popa Bar Shmuel, Chazei da'ano koshish me'avuch, look at me, I'm older than your dad. Now, you can imagine Rav Popa's reaction. He thought he was buying himself a youthful slave, suitable for many years of service, and lo and behold, it turns out that he's quite an aged fellow. Kori anachshe, Rav Popa referred to himself in the context of his buying of the slave, and Rava not, Tzadik Mitzora Nechatz, the righteous one, a reference to Rava, is spared from suffering. V'yavoi Acher Tachtov, and referring to himself, he says, and someone else will come in his place, meaning the righteous one that was spared of the trouble, someone else will come along to absorb the trouble. Himself absorbing the trouble of having bought a slave that is actually not worth the money that he paid for him. With that, you can see we've come to the end of the fourth perek of Bava Metzian. With the help of the one above, we are continuing now with the fifth perek of Bava Metzian, perek Ezu Neshech. In the world of Torah learning, this is a very famous perek. It's a chapter of Gemara that's dedicated to the laws of interest. In Hebrew, we refer to it as ribbis, and we'll see as we go into the Gemara, the word ribbis has its roots in the Torah word tarbis that is found in the Chumash in Sefer Vayikra. The laws of interest are forbidden, and it's interesting to note that even though interest, the taking of interest, is superficially in the realm of financial behavior, financial conduct, the realm of Dinei Mominus, when it comes to the section of Shulchan Aruch in which the laws of Ribbis are discussed, they are discussed in Yoredeya, which is the section of the Shulchan Aruch, which is itself, Shulchan Aruch is broken down into four different areas, laws, Orach Chaim, daily type laws referring to daily ritual and Shabbos and holidays, and there's Evan Ezer, which is a section of Shulchan Aruch dealing primarily with matters concerning family law, marriage and divorce, Choshen Mishpat, the section of Shulchan Aruch dealing with monetary financial concerns, and Yoredeya, a section of Shulchan Aruch that is concerned with ritual law. Where are the laws of interest? Not in Choshen Mishpat, where you might have thought, but rather in the realm of Yoredeya. As far as why that is the case, I think you'll see allusions to that when we go into the Gemara, where, just to give you a taste of things, regarding the laws of interest, not only is it forbidden for one to take interest, for a Jew to take from a fellow Jew interest, it's even prohibited for the receiver of, we'll say, the loan, the borrower of the money, to pay out interest. So that, as in terms of the Gemara, the prohibition of interest is not simply a function of, we'll say, unfair gain or profit of money. That would be true if the laws of interest were limited to the lender who gets more than he gave out. But the prohibition extends even to the borrower of the money. He is not allowed to pay out interest. I heard a beautiful explanation that the concept of lending someone money is a concept of an act of loving kindness. We call it chesed, and it is simply wrong to charge someone be paid for doing something that in effect is an act of chesed. Loaning someone money is a chesed. It is simply not right that someone should be paid for doing chesed. That's a general idea. I'm not going to say that it's a strict halachic reality. There are, for example, there the Gemara in Dorim does speak about places where the minhag was to pay people for doing bikur cholim, for visiting the sick, which is also an act of loving kindness. But in general terms, that was an idea that might help one understand the problem behind taking interest in the context of loans, and we'll see later business practices. The Mishnah opens up with words that appear to be a question. Ezu neshech, ezu tarbis. What is neshech and what is tarbis? Asking a question like that gives one the impression that one is aware that there is something that is called neshech and something that is called tarbis, and we're now asking what is neshech and what is tarbis. But wouldn't you assume that you should be aware at the outset that they even exist? You've got to be aware that they exist, that there's such a thing called neshech and such a thing called tarbis before you can ask which is which or what are the characteristics. So I believe that the Mishnah is working with the assumption that you're familiar with the pasuk in Sefer Vayikra, chapter Chof Hei, pasuk Lamed Zayin. And that pasuk, you'll see, is quoted in the Gemara, the lower part of the page. So let's open just by quoting that verse, three lines from the bottom of this Omid of Gemara. It says, Es kaspecha loy sitein loy ben neshech. Notice the word neshech. Uve marbis loy sitein ochlecha. And there you've got the word marbis, or as the Mishnah refers to the word tarbis. So in the pasuk, there's reference to the extending of money. Don't give it in neshech terms. And giving your food, do not give it in marbis or tarbis terms. So we know that these terms exist from the scripture. Hence, the Mishnah allows itself to ask now, what is meant by Ezu Neshech, the Ezu Tarbis? As we open up the Mishnah, so there's this, we're given the impression that they're two separate things, they're two different things. That mode of thinking, though, will be subject to change. At the end of the day, you'll find that Neshech and Tarbis are, in a sense, one in the same. The Mishnah continues, Ezehu Neshech, Hamalve Sela Behe Dinrim. One extends a loan of a Sela. A Sela is a denomination of currency. Relatively speaking, a large denomination of currency. One sela is worth four dinar. Dinar being a smaller form of currency, a quarter value of a sela. So I'm extending you a loan of a sela, which is, we'll say, four dinar. Understanding, behe dinarim, that you're going to give me back later on five dinar. We've mentioned in the past the concept of interest is based on the return of more money than one received in the loan, because the lender was willing to wait for the money to be repaid. We call that agar notar. Agar is schar, notar is waiting. The payment that one receives for agreeing to wait to get his money in return. We've seen brief allusions to cases, sukkis, where more money is paid back than was received, and that being in fact allowed because there was no time factor. There wasn't any waiting for the return. And we saw an example being, I need some cash now. I don't have cash on me, but I have cash in my house. So I can agree to, we can agree that you will give me the money that I need right now. I want to buy a can of soft drink, and the can of soft drink, just for argument's sake, costs $1. And I say to you, give me $1, and now I have the money right now, but it's in my house, and I'll give you back $1.50. That's okay. Why? And that's because there's no time delay in as such. It was only a mitigating, let's say, distance factor, or other cases where I don't have the key right now to get to the means of payback, but I have the means right now under my ownership. I want to caution, as we've mentioned often in the past, that our study in the context of Gemara markings, Daf Yomi Shiurim, are purely for the understanding of the, we'll say, the simple pshat in the Gemara, but by no means shall one take anything that we say as and apply it to actual halacha. So that examples, including examples we just gave, we hear them, we're saying them for illustration purposes only. Do not by any means act upon them. Any questions that you have in these laws, as well as everything else, you must study the topics more thoroughly, more commentaries, and consult responsible traditional halachic authorities. Let's continue in our Mishnah. Sosayim chitim b'shalosh. I give you two saw of chitim with the understanding that you will give me back three. Aser b'nei shehu noshech. That's forbidden because that is like biting into the receiving party. In other words, if I give to you four dinar and then I expect to get back five, I'm biting out of you the fifth dinar, or I'm biting out of you the third saw. V'ezu tarbis. Word tarbis has to do with increase. Hamarbe b'peros. Ketzad. What do you mean by that? Lokach heimenu chitin bedinar zav. Now, here we have a commercial transaction as opposed to a loan. A sale is what's featured here. Just for the record, a sale that we're going to describe now, getting back more, so to speak, is an isur derabonan. It's not an isur doraisa. That will have value. That comment will have value later on. But in the meantime, we're asking what is an example of marbe beperos. So we say ketzad lokach himenu chitin bedinor zov hakur v'chein hashar. V'chein hashar means and the price has been established for the public. So what happened? I bought from you chitin. How much did I buy? Well, I bought a dinar zohav worth of chitim, which would get me a kur. A kur is a measure, it happens to be 30 sa'ah. So I paid you, or I would say we agreed for you to supply me with a kur of wheat, costing a dinar zohav. A dinar zohav is 25 silver dinar. So one golden dinar is worth 25 silver dinar. And that was the rate. That was the public rate. We agreed to a deal at the going rate. Umdu chitim belamidim. After a while, before I received delivery of the grains that I agreed to buy, they went up in price. Instead of 25 dinar kesef for the kur, a kur is now worth 30 dinarim. Omar lo, the customer said, tain li chitai. Give me my wheat. Shani roitzeh lebochron v'likach ben yayin. I want the wheat because right now, in fact, I want to exchange the wheat for wine. There's a Rashi just a few lines down from here. Omar lo tein li chitai, give me my wheat. Now, if he, paid 25 dinar kesef for the wheat, is he allowed to get a core of wheat that's now worth 30 dinar kesef? So Rashi says in Dibur Masel, Omar lo tein li chitai, vizumu terasi im nosan lo chitim. This would be okay if the wheat supplier would deliver wheat. So even though the supplier received 25 dinar kesef, he is allowed to pay 30 in wheat value. And now, our customer here, as we saw in the Mishnah, says the reason he wants the grains is really because he wants to exchange the grains for wine. Omar lo, so the wheat supplier says, Harei chitecha asir salai b'shloshim. Let us view the grains as 30 dinar kesef. Varei lecha etzli b'nyayin. And I will supply you with 30 dinar kesef worth of wine. V'yayin ein lo, and this particular vendor doesn't have any wine. Usher, that would be prohibited. We look in the Rashi that we started reading. Let's read it again. Omar lo tein li chitai v'zumu teresi nosan lo chitim. It would have been okay for the grain supplier to have delivered the wheat as was originally agreed upon. Aval pisuka yayin shepoisek lo loses bohen, but the agreement now to supply wine instead of the wheat, usur, that is prohibited. Hoyol v'ein loy, since that vendor, that wholesaler, that supplier, he doesn't have any wine. Shemo yoykir hayayin, the fear is that the price of wine will go up. V'afal pi shepoisigimo kishar hayayin shach. So even if they happen to agree upon providing of wine according to the current market rate, ukvar yotza shar, nevertheless, this arrangement would not be allowed. In other words, to have received 25 dinar for the purchase of grain, only later to have the delivery of, we'll say, of 30 dinar worth of wine, in the event that this supplier doesn't have any wine, we cannot allow that. What we've done is essentially explained the Mishnah through on a translation level. We haven't explained the nuts and bolts behind this. There is a lot of work ahead of us on this topic. The Gemara. Regarding the opening of the Mishnah, where it said, Ezu Tarbis, what is Tarbis? And the Mishnah went on to explain, Tarbis has to do with a commercial transaction, a case of a sale. Now, we mentioned that paying a certain amount and getting more later, a greater amount in value of item later on, that is not a Torah-level prohibition. The Torah prohibits getting more than you gave in the context of loans and repayment thereof. Here, we're talking about giving money for a purchase and getting greater value later on. That's maybe prohibited, but only on a rabbinic level. So, the Gemara points out, Midashovik l'ribis d'oraisa v'komeforesh d'rabbanan, from the fact that the Mishnah abandoned giving as an example of tarbis, of ribis, a Torah level prohibition and explained Tarbis on a rabbinic level, Michlal, we can infer from that that D'oraisa on a Torah level, the Neshech v'Tarbis Chado Milsahi, that Neshech and Tarbis are really one in the same. The Gemara says, how can you say they're one in the same? V'ha kroi k'sivi neshech kesef v'ribis oichel. We know that in the psukim, and we already opened up with the relevant pasuk, the two words appear as separate entities. And you can look in the Rashi, we can do it together. Rashi before, the Rashi gets wide, four lines before they get wide. Rashi says, V'oksiv neshech kesef v'ribis oichel. The pasuk says, "Es kaspucha lo sitein lo b'neshech, uve marbis lo sitein ochlecha." We mentioned that this was in Vayikra Perichov Hei Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Umidecholkei lishnei lavim, from the fact that the pasuk divides it into two negative commands. In our markings, if you're looking at our marked Gemara, you can see that the word lo has been squiggle underlined. The line just before this, you have number one, lo sitein lo b'neshech. Lo is do not. That's a negative command. And number two, you sow v'marbis loy sitein ochlecha. That's a second negative command. The fact that you have two separate negative commands, tartininu, it would appear that they're two separate things. At this point, we have a long marking, and we have a dalet means a dechia. This is a long rejection of what we just tried to claim. Namely, we just tried to claim that from the pasuk, it would appear that they're two separate things, and we'll show you now how they can't be split apart. You can't say that neshech is something different than ribis. And now the Gemara. Fetisbara, explain yourself. De'iko neshech below tarbis, v'tarbis below neshech. Could there be a situation of neshech without tarbis? Neshech, literally, as we said before, means biting into the next guy. Could there be a situation where we're biting into the next guy and there's no increase? Or there's increase without having bitten into him? We look together in the Rashi on the last narrow line. Mi goneshech shenoshech es chaveru v'ein mamono misrabe, that you bite into your friend. Bite, of course, is a figure of speech, but you're taking more from him than you got. Could you have a case where you're getting more from him and there's no increase in the money? Rashi continues, Umiko tarbis she malve niskar. Could you have a lender profiting velo yehe lova nashuch, and the borrower doesn't come out being the victim of having been bitten into? By the way, you see that the term neshech is more of a description of what the lender is doing, and neshech, the lender is biting into him. I should say maybe the opposite. The victim of the neshech, the one who feels the neshech, is the borrower, and the marvis, the one who profits, that would be the lender. But can you separate the two phenomena from one another? Now let's continue in the Gemara. We have a diamond marking. Notice we have two of them. On the side, under our Nosei / Mivne heading, the diamonds represent Nisyonos. These are attempts. E kayem neshech below itarbis, or itarbis below neshech, bli neshech. Could one exist in the absence of the other? The first diamond highlights the phrase neshech below tarbis, and a few lines later, you see tarbis below neshech. Another marking that will appear is a house marking. One with the point facing up is a suggestion, and the inverted house shape indicates a rejection. rejection of that suggestion. Now the Gemara. Neshech below Tarbis. Heichi domi. How could that, say, possibly be? Not that it's really going to exist, but theoretically, how could you even imagine Neshech, where the victim is bitten into, and the offender, low tarbis, doesn't profit? E the oisve me'ah, b'me'ah v'yesrim. Imagine a case where 100 prutos. Prutos is a small form of currency. 100 coins, 100 pruto coins were loaned out, were lent, and in return, he would receive 120 of them. Meikara kaimi mea bedanka. When the loan took place, 100 prutos was the equivalent of a danka. Danka literally is a sixth. A sixth is a reference to a sixth of a dinar. Dinar is a form of currency, a denomination of currency. A danka also is a ma'a. Ma'a is one-sixth of a dinar. So, originally, when the loan took place, 100 prutos happened to be worth a danka. Ula b'sof, and when payback takes place, kaimi me'a v'yesrim b'danka. The value of the danka went up to the point that 120 prutos are needed to get a danka, to be exchanged. If you took 120 prutos, you would be able to exchange them for a danka. So initially, 100, when the loan took place, 100 prutos could be exchanged for a danka, and when payback came back, it was such that you'd need 120 prutos to get a danka. Neshech Ika. There is Neshech, the Kanochis Lay. The lender is, let's say, biting into, so to speak, and causing a chisaron, a loss, on the part of the borrower. The Koshokil Mine Midi Delo Yohiv. He is getting from him, namely 120, something that he did not give. He didn't give 120, he gave 100 in the initial loan. So there is an example of Neshech. V'tarbis leka. You might say that, well, there's no tarbis, there's no increase. The less le revocha, the lender doesn't profit in this case. The danka isve v'danka koshokil mine. He lent out a danka's worth of prutos and got back a danka's worth of prutos. So there's no increase. Soif. However, at the end of the day, you have to determine, how do we look at things? Do we look at things in initial terms, or do we look at things in the final picture? We've used this double underline to highlight these two aspects here, and you'll see that marking repeated later. Self again. E Basur Meikara Azlis. And here we look at Rashi on the third line under the Gemara text. E Basur Meikara Azlis. E Hashvis Lahani Prutos Hashta Kidmeikara. If you look at the Prutos that are being paid now in original terms, if you look at things in that fashion, in other words, the current payback, but in initial terms. So if you do that, Rashi goes on to say, Hare Neshech, Hare Tarbis. In fact, both are taking place. So let's go back to our Gemara. E Boser Meikara Azlis. If you look at things in original terms, in other words, right now, the lender is getting 120 prutos in return. Well, if you look in original terms, what's the story with those 120? With those 120, he would have been, in original terms, be able to exchange them for a ma'a and have 20 change, balance of 20 extra. So with that, you have neshech. You have received more than you gave. You gave 100 and you're getting back 120. Very tarbis, and there's also profit. As we explained, in original terms, the 120 that you're getting now would have enabled you to get not only a maw, but also have 20 extra, 20 prutos extra. Let's continue in the Gemara. E boser besof aslis, if you look at things at the end in their current form, whereby you originally extended 100 and now you're getting back 120, and let's look at the 120 in current terms. Lo neshech iko velo tarbis iko. You don't have neshech. What is meant by that? Rashi says lo neshech iko, where we left off. Rashi says she haloive yachol liknoisam b'ma v'ze shava ma hilveu. The loive with that 120 that he's going to pay back with now, that the loive could acquire 120 by paying right now, current terms, a maw. So with a maw, the borrower can get 120. What did he receive initially? He received the value of a maw in prutos. So he's paying back now something that a value that reflects what he initially received. So if you look in current terms, this borrower isn't being bitten into. There's no neshech, and there's no tarbis. That's velo tarbis ika. And as far as the lender is concerned, he's not profiting. He lent out initially a maw's worth of prutos, and he's getting back now, in current terms, only a maw's worth of prutos. Vesu, furthermore, tarbis below neshech, hechidomi. How could you have a case of tarbis separate from neshech? E the oizif mea b'mea, if he loaned 100 with the expectation of getting paid back 100. And what? Meikara kaimi meabadanka. Initially, 100 prutos could have been exchanged for a danka. Ulebesof meabachumsha. And when payback time came, 100 prutos would actually get you more. It would get you a chumsha, a fifth of a dinar. Let's repeat that. If these are the circumstances, that initially the 100 prutos could have been exchanged for a mere sixth of a dinar. And when payback came, the 100 prutos would be able to get you a larger amount, a fifth of a dinar. E basume kara aslis, if you look at the payback in initial terms, loy neshech ika velo tarbis ika. You will find that there's no biting into him. In what sense? Very simply, the borrower got 100 and he's paying back 100. So he's not being bitten into, he's giving back the same amount that he got. And there's no profit either. If you look at the payback in initial terms, the lender gave 100 and he's getting back 100. He's not getting more than he loaned out. Ebaser sof aslis, if you look at the payback in current terms, well, hare neshech v'hare tarbis. You'll find then that you have both neshech, because in current terms, you see this, the borrower received an amount that he could have exchanged for a mere sixth of a dinar. And now when he pays back, he's paying back an amount that he would need to to pay a fifth of a dinar in order to get this hundred, these 100 prutos in order to pay back the lender. So this borrower, in terms of current terms, is being bitten into. He has to pay out. He has to pay out more in order to get the 100 prutas than he originally would have had to pay out. And there's tarbis because the lender is getting back more value than he originally lent out. So you see that through all these examples, we are unable to split the two prohibitions, neshech and tarbis, from one another. Wherever you have one, you've got the other. Wherever one doesn't exist, the other one doesn't exist either. Hello, Omar Rova. I atomotzi. Lo neshech, lo tarbis, lo tarbis, lo neshech. You will not find a case of neshech without tarbis, nor tarbis without neshech. Velo chilkun akosav elo lav or alav b'shnei lavin. The Torah presents them as separate, only to make matters more severe, that a person who loans out money with interest gets paid back the loan with the interest. So there is a double violation. He has violated two negative commands. On the side of the Gemara, under the Nosei / Mivneh heading, we've indicated that the crown shape are Makoros min apsukim d'yeshnei chiyuvim, sources from the psukim, that there are two prohibitions, neshech v'tarbis al kesef, oichel ushar dvorim, whether it's a loan of money, a loan of food, or a loan of anything else, where more is being paid back than was originally received, there are two negative commands. So we open up with a Tanaic source that you see continues a considerable number of lines down, Samach Aleph Omen Aleph. We've also provided, in addition to the marking within the Gemara text, the framed source, there's a numbering scheme that appears in the framed source. We have a table at the bottom of the page. I'm hoping, as I always do, that everyone is taking full advantage of the Shas Ozer, the marked Gemaras, and you notice these additional features, in this case the table at the bottom, where we have within the table a series of numbers. Now these numbers that are circled correspond to the numbers in the Gemara. So just to get a feel of what we're about to do, in looking at the table at the bottom of the page, you see at the heading Kesef and Oichel, cash and food. Under those respective headings, you have additional, the next line down, you've got under Kesef, you have the issue of Neshech and the issue of Tarbis. We're looking for psukim that indicate that in cash loans, there is a neshech violation and there's a tarbis violation. Likewise, in loans of oichel, of food, there is a neshech and a tarbis violation. Where do you see these things in the psukim? Furthermore, along the side of this table, you notice malve and love. These violations apply to the one loaning these things, lending out the money or the food, and the lova, the one who pays back, he's paying back more than he received, he is also in violation. Another point I think that is of value, even before we get into the Gemara itself, is that we will, in the course of this source, be suggesting scriptural sources for certain points. But as we go on, those suggestions will be changed, will be altered. So that as we go through the Gemara, if you choose to learn the Gemara along with the chart, be aware, and we've tried to indicate this on the chart itself, that certain points are altered or changed as we go on. Now we turn to the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan. We open with a pasuk, and we also note between the lines that the pasuk is featuring the malve, the one who's loaning, the lender. It says, "Es kas b'chol lo sitein loy b'neshech, uvemarbis lo sitein ochlecha." You shall not give your cash in neshech terms, and you shall not give food in marbis terms. Ein li elo neshech b'kesef v'ribis b'chol. From this pasuk, it would appear that the lav, the prohibition of neshech, has relevance to cash. The prohibition of ribis has relevance to food. And again, I mentioned within the context of the malve. So what can we take stock of what we've just accomplished? Well, you see we have numbers. If you look on your chart, you'll see, where do you see number one? You see number one in the context of the malve and cash and the command, the negative command of neshech. And that's the pasuk that we just read as kas b'chol lo sitein lo b'neshech. Kas was cash, do not give it in neshech, where you're gonna get back more than you gave. Where do you see number two on your chart? So you might have to look a little carefully, but under the ochel heading, you see tarbis, and that's the continuation of the very same pasuk we just read, uva marbis lo sitein ochlecha. So we've accounted for the lav of the negative commands of neshech by kesef, and the negative command of tarbis by oichel. Let's continue in our Gemara. Neshech ba'oichel minayin. Where do you know that there's a negative command of lo sitein lo b'neshech when it comes to food? Talmud Lomar, this pasuk, and then we note this pasuk is in the context of the love. It says neshech oichel. This is in Vayikra. This pasuk, this pasuk is in Dvarim, Perek Chof Gimel Pasuk Chof. On the side of the Gemara, we've included this, and we noted, let's read the pasuk, noting, of course, this is a pasuk directed at the lov of the borrower. It says, Lo sashich lo chicha, neshech kesef, neshech oichel, neshech kol dovar asher yishach. So in the pasuk we just read, you see the expression neshech oichel. So if we're looking for the negative command of neshech in the context of food, well, you've got a pasuk that says that. Let's continue. And by the way, on the chart, do you see where number three is? Yes, you'll notice number three under the heading of oichel in the context of the loive. And we've noted on the chart, Dvorim Chof Gimel Pasuk Chof Neshech Oichel, and note in parentheses we've also noted by Hemshech Ze Mishtanen. As we go on, as we will go on, you'll see that this changes. But in the meantime, if you're looking for a negative command of Neshech in the context of Oichel, we're suggesting Dvorim Chof Gimel Pasuk Chof. Let's continue. Ribis Bekesef Minayin. Up till now, we knew about marbis by food. How about ribis? Marbis, ribis, same expression. How do you know about ribis by cash? Minayim. Talmud Lomar, in the very same pasuk that we cited, it happens to say neshech kesef. But one second. I'm looking not for neshech by kesef, that we've already established. That's, we saw that in Vayikra Chafei Pasuk Lamed Zayin. What am I gaining by saying neshech kesef over here? I'm looking for a source that talks about ribis bekesef. So we go on to the top of Samach Aleph. Im eino inyan leneshech kesef share kvar nemar. If I don't need this posuk that says neshech kesef, this phrase, I do not need to tell me about the Isser of Neshech by Kesef, because that was already taught. What does it say? It says right there, Lo Sashich Lochicha. That's at the beginning of the Pasuk in Dvarim, Chof Gimel, Pasuk Chof, which we read already. Lo Sashich Lochicha. That's the prohibition of Neshech. which would include kesef. So what does the phrase neshech kesef in that posuk mean? Teneu inyan leribis kesef. Therefore, we're going to, through the power of the oral tradition of Torah Shebaal Peh, we allow you to say that the posuk, though it says neshech kesef, to refer to ribis by kesef. Well, that's very nice that we have a posuk that we can now account for neshech by food and ribis by cash. However, that doesn't solve all of what we're looking for. Ein li ela beloive. That is true with regard to the love, to the borrower of the money, that he's not allowed to pay back more in kesef, more in oichel, bemalve minayin. Where do I know this when it comes to the malve, to the lender? Ne'mar neshech beloive, ve'ne'mar neshech bemalve. We find the same term in both contexts, by the lender and by the borrower. Ma neshech beloive, just like neshech in the context of the borrower. Lo chilata boy bein bekesef, bein ba'oichel, bein beneshech, bein beribis. When it comes to the borrower, no distinction was made between cash and food, nor between neshech and ribis. Namely, neshech and ribis apply equally to kesef, neshech and ribis apply equally to oichel. We know that by the loveh. And we pointed out before that in the pasuk of the love, it had said, "Lo sashich lachicha." Af neshech omur b'malve. So too, when it comes to neshech, the word neshech that you appear in the context of the malve, the lender, lo tachluk bo. Make no distinction bein b'kesef bein b'ochel, bein b'neshech bein b'ribis. So just like neshech and ribis, the two lavim apply to kesef, they apply to oichel as well. Minayin l'rabbis kol davar. How do we know to include all items beyond cash and food? Talmud lomar, the pasuk said neshech kol davar asher yishach. That you also saw in the pasuk we read, Dvarim perek chof gimel pasuk chof. So for those who are interested, you can look back at the chart and you will find there an accounting for all the points. So that we already made reference to point number 3, where we were trying to find a source for Neshech by Oichel. And we found that in a pasuk referring to the Loive. We pointed out that as the source would be changed, and in fact that became, you see right there in that same block on the table, number 5, the pasuk Dvarim Chof Gimel Pasuk Chof Lo Sashich Lo Chicha. And that, by the way, you'll notice that number 5 appears also as the source for Neshech by Cash by the Loveh. So that neshech, as it applies to cash and food, are learned from lo sashich le'ochicha. The source for tarbis by oichel, by the love, that was referred to in the pasuk that said Neshech Ochel, and we said you don't need it to say Neshech Ochel, and we said im eino inyan, if it doesn't refer to that, it's going to, I should say that, let me correct myself, that through the pasuk of Neshech Ochel, since I don't need to see Neshech by Ochel, because we already have a source for that, we can say that refers to Tarbis by Ochel. And as far as finding where we conclude that, you can look into Rashi on Samach Aleph and Aleph Dibor Masl Talmud Lomar. There are more details, and for that you can just look at the chart instead of us having to go over the entire Gemara again. We continue though in the Gemara. Ravina Omar. Loi neshech ba'oichel v'lo tarbit v'lo ribis bekesef tsrifi kra. As far as sources for the isur of neshech by food, and a source for ribis by kesef, you don't need the gezera shava from the case of love to teach me the rules by the malve. Why don't I need the gezera shava for that? So the Gemara will point out, Ravina will point out, that when you look carefully at the pasuk that deals with the malve, all of the relevant information is contained therein. Before we go on with the Gemara, we look back at the pasuk dealing with the malve. That was Vayikra Perikov Hei Pasuk Lamed Zayin. We see it quoted three lines from the bottom of Samach Amud Beis, and it said there, Es kaspecha lo sitein loi b'neshech, uvemarbis lo sitein ochlecha. We continue now in the Gemara. You might want to keep one finger on the pasuk itself. The Gemara says, Di'i kasiv es kaspecha lo sitein lo b'neshech, v'ochlecha lo sitein b'marbis. Had the pasuk said that which it does not say, Kidakarmis, then I would agree with you that in order to find the Isser of Ribis by Kesef and the Isser of Neshech by Oichel, you would need the Gezerah Shava. However, Hashtu Dichtiv, as Kaspecha lo sitein lo b'neshech, uve marbis lo sitein ochlecha. Notice where you have the items referred to, Kesef and Ochlecha. Cash and food. We've dashed underline them. They're at the extremes of the pasuk. The prohibition of neshech and marbis, where are they located in this pasuk? In the middle. We've got those words dot underline. Being that the pasuk is set up like this, kri bay hachi, you can read the pasuk like this: es kaspecha lo sitein lo. The malva is warned, do not give your money in a loan fashion where you're going to get back more, which will result in a violation of neshech and marbis. So we see by kesef both lavim appearing, and you can read the same pasuk by picking up from the word neshech, which was in the middle of the pasuk. You could pick up the pasuk from the middle and read, "Uveneshech uvemarbis lo sitein ochlecha." What do you see from that? If you were to start the pasuk in the middle, you would see that both lavim, neshech and marbis, apply equally to oichel. So, as far as the malva is concerned, I know that cash has both neshech and marbis, and food has neshech and marbis. I don't need the gezeira shava from the case of the Lova in order to shed light, to teach me about the Malva. The Gemara asks, but when you look at the original Tanaic source, Vahotana Nemar, Nemar Komar, but the Tana said, it says Neshech by the Lova, it says Neshech by the Malva. That means that we do make the Gezerah Shav, and we don't follow this this approach of looking at the lavim in the middle of the pasuk and having them both apply to the respective extremities. The Gemara responds, Hochi Komar Tana. We're adding the word Tana based on Rashi's Girsa. What the Tana's intent is as follows: Ilu lo nemar kro, had the pasuk not been phrased as it is in reality, Yisiyam Gzera Shava, I would have relied on the Gzera Shava. However, Achshav Shenem Akra, now that I have the posuk as it in fact is, with Neshech and Marbis in the middle, and Kaspecha at one end, Ochlecha on the other end, enabling me to read Neshech and Marbis as relating to Kesef, and Neshech and Marbis as relating to Eichel. Gzeira Shava Lo Tzarech, I don't need the Gzeira Shava. Well, Gzeira Shava Lomali, so what benefit do I have from the Gzeira Shava? What am I going to learn from the Lova to the Malva? Answer. The prohibition of Neshech as it relates to all things beyond cash and food, that idea you don't have written by the Malva. In the Malva Pasuk, you have a reference to cash and food. What about loaning someone 5 pencils in exchange for getting back 6 pencils? That information I know by the Lova. How about by the Malveh? I know that because of the Gzereshav of Neshech, Neshech. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.